Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Hey, it's 12:03, Monday afternoon, October 28th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. The immersive entertainment company Cosm has reached a deal with the NFL to broadcast league games. We'll cover that in our next segment, but right now, the busy week ahead on Wall Street includes data on consumers, housing, and the overall health of the U.S. jobs market. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Gus, thank you for joining us today. And the data coming out this week, and just the sheer amount of news we're going to have this week going in the next week, this is far from a yawner, Gus. So let's begin with just some of the numbers coming out later this week, starting with home prices and job openings, especially on the job openings front, Gus. There was a lot of, you know, concern a couple of months ago about the health of the job market, the number of job openings. What will that tell us?
Yeah, so you know, what we're seeing is the number of job openings is slowly falling. We do see businesses cutting back on their hiring, but what we're also seeing is that layoffs are incredibly low right now. So businesses are still dealing with strong demand. They don't want to be caught short with too many workers, so layoffs remain extremely low. So as long as layoffs remain low and hiring remains okay, if not great, then I think the labor market will continue to hold up through the rest of this year and then into 2025.
And then we have three data points this week that not only will tell us about the health of the economy, but it will also give us an indication of where the Fed may be going with interest rates. And that is, we have the two reads on jobs, Wednesday and Friday, the private payroll report Wednesday morning, the government report on Friday morning. And then sandwiched in between that is the PCE, which is the Fed's preferred inflation gauge. So what does the jobs report have to tell us, and what does the PCE report have to tell us about inflation to give us an idea of where the Fed is going with interest rate cuts?
Yeah, I, to be honest with you, I'm not sure how helpful the jobs report is going to be this month. We've got the impacts of Hurricanes Helene and Milton, so they're going to weigh on job growth. We've got the Boeing strike, and not only do you have the workers who are out on strike, but you have the workers for the suppliers who may be laid off. So it's going to be very difficult to tell anything from the jobs report, and I think the Federal Open Market Committee is going to be looking through that, and I don't expect them to make a decision on interest rates based on the jobs report. What we will get is that the PCE inflation report, we did see a little bit of a pickup in CPI inflation in September, and what we'll see is it looks a little bit higher in the PCE report as well, but I think on a year-over-year basis it continues to slow, and given that, I do expect that we'll see the FOMC cut that Fed funds rate by a quarter of a percentage point when they meet next week on the Thursday after the election.
And we got a reading on consumer confidence coming out tomorrow. And there's an interesting thing that's starting to show up in some of these consumer confidence and consumer sentiment surveys, is that they're more than just the gas price indicator, but they're also tinged ever so slightly by politics. And especially since we're coming up on a presidential election, will there be some political factors playing into how survey respondents view the economy and their own personal situation?
Absolutely. You know, what we see is that Republicans tend to be more negative on the economy when there's a Democrat in the White House and vice versa. So I think given the tightness of the election and the fact that there's a lot of uncertainty there, I think a lot of people are going to be on edge, and that's going to weigh on consumer confidence. But at the same point, we continue to see the stock market do quite well. So that's a big positive. To be honest with you, consumer spending has held up much better than confidence. So people say they aren't very confident, but they're not spending like it. So I've been discounting consumer confidence lately, and I think that's likely to remain the case at least until we get through the election season.
Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, the NFL is poised to conquer its next frontier.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The NFL has reached a deal with the tech company Cosm to present an immersive experience for games. Let's get the details from Matt Wren, tech expert and founder of VRAR Chicago. Thank you for joining us, Matt. And the first thing that pops into my head when I think about this immersive experience is the Sphere in Las Vegas. So is the Cosm concept similar to what they have at the Sphere?
I would imagine it is very similar. It's not quite as big. The Sphere in Las Vegas is humongous. I don't know the actual dimensions. But, you know, Cosm, the whole concept of Cosm is it's a massive, massive video screen, so massive that you almost, like, don't see the edges of it when you're sitting in your seat. It's just like you're sitting. You're looking at a very, very high-definition video screen, but it's almost like you're sitting at a seat at the actual stadium of whatever game you're watching.
And the NFL is already reaching a partnership with Cosm to show games in these venues. What does this mean, though, as far as how the equipment that the broadcasters will have to bring to show these games in this venue? Do they need special cameras or more cameras or more angles? Or can you just show the game as it exists on this in this Cosm venue, and the experience will be very different?
I mean, there's definitely specialized equipment. So, I mean, I don't know if you know, the cameras that have been in stadiums, football games, the Olympics, you name it, there's hundreds of cameras now per event, and they've been getting upgrades, and there's, you know, I mean, they've got cameras on the pylons on the corner of the football, the end zone now. And so there's lots of camera equipment that's been going into the stadiums. That's definitely be getting an upgrade, more and more high definition, more and more, I'll say, wider angle, so that, you know, almost immersive 360 or not 360 necessarily, but 180 degree experiences. And then when you mask that with, again, a massive, massive screen at a venue like Cosm, the goal is to essentially try to bring the in-stadium fan experience somewhere that it's not necessarily directly at the stadium. It's really kind of funny that the Los Angeles Cosm is actually very close to the actual stadium itself. I think they're in the same complex. But yeah, that's the whole goal. There's definitely specialized equipment. Obviously, the speed that you need to send that video transmission out is going to be huge because it's massively high definition. So a lot of bandwidth there, too.
We're talking about Cosm, this immersive NFL experience, with Matt Wren, tech expert and founder of VRAR Chicago. This deal with the NFL involves Thursday night football games on Amazon, Sunday night games from NBC, Monday night football on ESPN, and select games on Sunday with Fox. And this is not just an eye-popping experience from what you can see, but it's also an eye-popping experience as far as the pricing is concerned, Matt, because that's because the domes fit about 700 people, and the ticket price will range between $22 and $127. So this is a substantial money-making opportunity as well.
Absolutely. And I mean, if you look at what they say about these games, too, the fans are coming to these games as if they're going to a stadium. They're wearing the jersey. They're bringing in the rally towels. They're treating this as if it's going to the game itself, albeit clearly much less expensive than actually going to a game. You know, at $20 to $120, I think that's probably $120 is maybe the cheapest ticket you can find almost anywhere to get into an actual NFL game nowadays with the resale prices. So while it's you know, I'll say it is different than being at the game, they're trying to make it as close to that experience as possible, albeit at much less the price. But again, for going to a venue like this, where there's bar, where there's restaurant, there's drinks, there's food, there's wait staff, it's almost like being able to afford a luxury box when you can't actually go into a luxury box. You get all the amenities without all the added cost. So, you know, obviously it's going to be great for the company that's doing this, very profitable for them, and at the same time, bringing a really cool experience to the fans.
And then, Matt, very quickly, this is kind of interesting in the sense that it combines two things that have become very obvious, especially since COVID-19 upended everything. And that was, one, you can experience something virtually, but two, you need to experience things either virtually or in real life with other people. You need that shared sense of community.
That is one of the big differences. So when you and I have spoken in the past about virtual reality, we're talking about virtual reality headset. You're in a headset, and if it's social, you're interacting with other people who are virtually there, but they're not physically there. The flip side of that is this type of experience where you've got 700 people all at the same location in a very immersive experience. Again, the immersive nature being provided by the giant video screen. But yes, the social aspect of it, the being there with other people, experiencing it with them, you know, and celebrating the touchdowns, getting the high fives. It's a very different experience than wearing a VR headset, even though somewhat related type of technology.
Matt Wren, tech expert and founder VRAR Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, we have new refund rules for airline passengers. It's
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The U.S. Department of Transportation has issued new refund rules for air travelers. Let's get the details from Joe Sweeterman, professor of public services and director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul University. Joe, thank you for joining us today. And these rules are now in effect. And that means if something happens to you on your flight, what can you demand from your airline to make sure they are in compliance with them?
You know, this new policy, I think, threads it pretty well. I think both the airlines and consumer groups feel like this is laying the groundwork for predictability. If a domestic flight is 3 hours late or an international flight is 6 hours late, you automatically get a refund. And it doesn't depend on the carrier's policy or nuance. It's just a plain right you have. And there's also checked baggage rules. If checked baggage doesn't come in 12 hours, full refund. But there's some other nuances in here that are really interesting as well.
And this is this in response to the meltdown in 2021, or specifically to the Southwest Airlines meltdown at the end of 2022?
Well, the Southwest meltdown was a class of its own, and that really started this whole discussion. And they learned the hard way that just how much angst these delays and cancellations put people through. I think, though, we've seen that the airline's been fending off the sort of airline passenger bill of rights legislation, which would be a little more like what we have in Europe with this big-time compensation if your flight is late. So the consumer groups didn't get that, but they got a more predictable approach here. And what's interesting is that they've added to this things like onboard Wi-Fi purchases, fees for extra add-ons all automatically get refunded. And I think the benefit is every airline will now have the same policy, so it's easier to inform consumers about their rights.
And on top of that, there are refunds for not only canceled flights, but for delayed flights, and the refunds for baggage issues, and reimbursements of airline fees. And what were the rules before these new policies took effect?
You know, each airline had their own approach here, but this and some allowed you, if they changed your flight up to 3 hours, you get a refund. Some had a different rule. The newer airlines like Breeze and discounters like Frontier often were a little bit more, let's just say, parsimonious about how they gave out these refunds. But now, yeah, if your flight's delayed 3 more hours domestically or 6 international, It's as simple as a click to get that full refund, and airlines have to do it fast now too. They can't drag it out.
Does this mean that the days of the airline travel credit or voucher are over?
Well, no, and I think we're going to see airlines get better at this, saying, "Look, if you don't cancel, we'll give you a voucher and maybe throw some sweeteners on it and so forth." Because they once they have your money, of course, they would like to keep it. And so they're getting real good at letting you keep that travel fund, so to speak, so you can use it on a future trip. They've also added language here, which is interesting about medical problems, particularly communicable diseases, that if you have something that could infect other passengers, it's just your right to get a refund.
Joe Sweeterman, professor of public services and director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul University, thank you for joining us today. Still ahead, Apple brings AI to its phones, plus a pair of investment ideas from our Monday stock picker.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. A coalition in Chicago questions the spending of taxpayer dollars on wrongful conviction settlements. A federal investigation involves the New York jail where rap mogul Sean Combs is being held. Apple releases an update with its artificial intelligence system for iPhones. And its Stock Picker Monday, we'll get a couple of suggestions from an investing pro. WBBM Business. U.S. markets are higher. The Dow is up 295 points, NASDAQ up 95, the S&P 500 up 23. We have 61 degrees right now at O'Hare under partly sunny skies. It's 12:31, topping our news at the half hour. A coalition in Chicago of faith leaders and elected officials gathering yesterday to discuss wrongful conviction settlements and their massive cost to taxpayers. Chicago Alderman Gilbert Villegas among those in attendance.
You have people that have been incarcerated for 10, 20, 30 years, and they're screaming out saying, I'm innocent. And then finally, they get that certificate of innocence, and they've been validated. But the city is continuing to fight these cases.
The group says the city has spent around $750 million on settlements since the year 2000. There's a federal investigation underway at the New York City jail where Sean Combs is being held. The details from CBS's Stacey Lynn.
Several law enforcement agencies are doing a sweep at the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn. In a statement, the Federal Bureau of Prisons said while there is no active threat at the facility, this is being done to ensure safety for both staff and inmates. The operation comes amid rising concerns over the jail's poor conditions, violence, and several inmate deaths.
The facility has held other high-profile inmates over the years, including R. Kelly and Sam Bankman-Fried. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. The markets are higher. Joining us now on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Jeff Kilberg, founder and CEO of KKM Financial in Chicago. Jeff, thank you for joining us today. And lots of market movers in the next 8 days. We have employment reports. We have the Fed's preferred inflation gauge. Then maybe the biggest market mover of them all, Election Day, a week from tomorrow. And yet the markets are higher as we start the new week.
Stocks continue to move higher. We had record-setting week last week in the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones. And actually, last Friday, we had an intraday all-time high for the NASDAQ 100. And we do have a lot of economic data. We certainly are weighing the outcome of the presidential election. But this is also the busiest week of the third quarter earnings reporting season. We're seeing about 150 names in the S&P 500. But a lot of the Mag 7 names we talk about, Rob, the Alphabet, Microsoft, Facebook, a.k.a. Meta platforms, Amazon, Apple, they're all reporting this week. So I think the short-term direction is going to be dictated by technology stocks because they've just overwhelmed us. NVIDIA is now the largest company in the world. You'd have laughed if I said that 3 or 4 years ago. They actually overtook Apple in market cap over $3 trillion. So this is a big, critical week to see if this bull rally, because remember, Rob, the markets are up 40% since last November. If we want more continued follow through, it's going to have to be in the earnings as well as some of the economic data that the Fed's looking at.
And with these earnings reports, I mean, some of the, as you point out, a lot of these valuations, especially in tech companies, are sky high. And the purpose of the third quarter earnings reports, as far as moving markets is concerned, is that making sure that the steak lines up with the sizzle that we're seeing.
That's right. And we want to see profitability. We want to see beats on the top and bottom lines. But also, we're looking at forward guidance. And a perfect example, we've been talking a lot about Tesla, our friend Elon Musk. Tesla has been a stock that just had a rip-roaring earnings result. We saw all the shorts, one of the highest shorted stocks out there. We saw the market move, and Tesla went from about $215 a share up to about $275 in, you know, faster than two shakes of a lamb's tail. So you are seeing movement inside of stocks. And right now, people have really been dependent upon the Magnificent Seven, these technology stocks. But I think it's time to reconsider outside of those, because if we do see markets continue to have follow through, that will get exciting for some of the blue chip names we don't talk a lot about.
On the election, it seems like the consensus is forming that we are not going to know a winner on Tuesday night and maybe not Wednesday morning. And possibly it'll be a rerun of 2020 when we finally determine a winner on a Saturday morning. Now, what is going to happen to the markets, though, if we have a winner or a winner is blindingly obvious on Tuesday night, regardless of who that winner is going to be? From a markets don't like uncertainty perspective, would they like the fact that we actually wrap this thing up on election night or maybe the day after?
I think markets love that certainty, but what's fascinating, and I don't get political, Rob, you know that. I just like to talk markets when I come on WBBM. But you are seeing this surge higher in equities. You're also seeing the surge in the 10-year yield. It's at 4.28%. That's about 65 basis points higher, in quite contrast to the Fed cutting by 50 basis points just a month ago. Right now, the market is kind of predicting that it's going to be a Republican victory. So it'll be interesting to see if that continue momentum in the stock market, which is predicting what November 5th is going to look like. But you're absolutely right. We want certainty. If it's a Republican or if it's a Democrat, we want to know as soon as possible, because markets do not like uncertainty. And that's where we could see some form or fashion of a pullback in an acute manner.
Jeff Kilberg, founder and CEO of KKM Financial in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, Apple brings AI to its iPhones.
Money conversation that pays a big dividend. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Apple has released an update for iPhones that includes the first public version of its artificial intelligence system. We're joined by Shelley Palmer, CEO of the Palmer Group, professor of advanced media in residence at the Newhouse School of Public Communications at Syracuse University. Shelley, thank you for joining us today. And it seems like Apple Intelligence, as it is being introduced to the latest Apple iOS system, is kind of a basic form of AI. It's Apple maybe dipping its toe in the water?
No question. It's just dipping its toe. Their strategy has been better late than never. And they got all the time in the world because they have the distribution. What you'll see today, if you are on an iPhone 15 Pro or better and you're running the newest iOS 18 update, what you'll see today are some system-wide writing tools that sort of give you the ChatGPT or Microsoft Copilot capability set across Apple's writing tools throughout your iPhone and throughout the Mac ecosystem. There's Siri's gotten a little bit better, so you can have a more natural, I'd say, better conversation with Siri, and you can also type to Siri, which you never used to be able to do, so that makes it also a little bit more like ChatGPT. They've done some fun things in the Photos app, so you can, you know, get rid of backgrounds and do some fundamental or rudimentary photo editing. It's way better than it used to be, but iOS 18, get ready, because they've super messed up the photo app. So if you're used to your old photos, go down to the bottom where it says customize, and you can turn everything off but the stuff that you used to have if you want to go back to the way your old photos used to look. And then you can ease yourself into what the new photos integration, the new app looks like. It's actually quite disconcerting for the first time if you're downloading iOS 18. And then look, they've got a whole bunch of different ways to prioritize messages, and they've integrated this into mail. It's sort of, it's worth your time to go through all of the different things they've added to iOS 18 that they're calling Apple Intelligence. There are little improvements everywhere and a little bit of agency given to some of the apps. But as you said, they're slow playing this.
Is that the prudent move at this point? Because it seems like the AI frontier is a little bit of a moving target, and you don't want to throw billions upon billions of dollars onto plan A for artificial intelligence, only to find out that plan C is the one that makes money.
Look, if you are a business, being a late mover has never been a better strategy than being than it is now. If you're Apple, they've got a slightly different strategy. They understand that it just needs to work, and it needs to work for everybody. And so they have nothing but time. They can wait and get it 100% right. They can literally roll these out one feature at a time and see how people react to them. And believe me, if they did it all at once, you wouldn't be able to learn it all anyway. This is one of the things that all Apple devices are great at, is they don't need a manual. Well, you'd need a manual for today. We don't have time, literally, to go over all the little improvements and incremental changes. It's going to take everybody weeks just to get through what this is, if they do it. So Apple will see what people like and what they don't like and what they'll use and what they won't use, what goes viral, what gets people talking, what gets people ignoring, and then they'll go from there. I think they're doing it exactly right, one step at a time. They have time, and, you know, they also have a billion and a half iPhones out there, so they want to make sure that they don't make anybody mad.
Well, it's interesting you bring up the iPhone, because it seems like Apple, throughout its history, kind of hangs back and watches other entities struggle or painfully evolve with new forms of technology, and then just hits the marketplace with something that improves on everything that's already out there. Because when iPod was introduced 23 years ago, there were already other efforts at digital music players and trying to get people to actually pay for digital music. And we just watched a couple of years of struggle and then came out with this darn near perfect ecosystem. The same thing goes for the iPhone, where they watched the best and worst of BlackBerries and then came out with a device that was probably the most revolutionary piece of technology since the TV was invented.
And to your point, that's exactly what's happening here. They get to watch and they get to learn. And ultimately, I think Apple is going to do it exactly right. And look, Google has made some terrible mistakes, as has Microsoft, as even as OpenAI. And so this, you know, pioneers are the ones with the arrows in their backs, is the cliche, right? This is definitely going to be a hard, hard, hard road to travel, and many mistakes will be made. And also, you don't know, tomorrow afternoon, something brand new will be invented that will, you know, change everything. So I think they're doing it right. If you are an iPhone user, you owe it to yourself to download iOS 18 and slowly but surely go through it. You'll like what they did to Siri. If you're a photo maker and a creator, you're really going to like what they've done in Photos. And if you're a business person, the summary tools that they put in, the writing tools that they put in there, sort of build in a primitive version of ChatGPT into the iPhone. Is it as good as ChatGPT? You be the judge for your needs. It all depends what you're doing. You have to choose the right tool for the job. But right now, Apple's given everybody a way to dip their toe in the water of artificial intelligence and agentic tools. And it's just the beginning, right? This is as bad as it's ever going to be. I'll leave it there.
Shelley Palmer, CEO of the Palmer Group, thank you for joining us today, talking about Apple intelligence on iPhones. Join us at this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday. And still to come, a visit with our Monday Stock Picker.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Stock Picker Monday. Joining us with a pair of investment ideas is Ken Crawford, Portfolio Manager with Argent Capital in Clayton, Missouri. Ken, thank you for joining us today. Two selections today, names you may not, that are necessarily top of mind, but they do govern a great deal of what happens in our lives.
Yes, Rob, I agree. A little bit off the beaten path, but certainly two companies very well positioned. The first, Booz Allen Hamilton. That's a consultant firm that has particular exposure to the government. And their areas of expertise include cybersecurity and artificial intelligence. So to the degree that, you know, unfortunately, the world is getting a little bit more dangerous and certainly more complex, the products and services that Booz Allen provides the government are increasing in value. And as a result, the company is posting very good growth.
And then your second selection, I mean, speaking of entities that really govern every piece of our lives, and that is it's your credit score, your FICO score. And FICO is an acronym, and that is the acronym for our next company.
Right, Fair Isaac Corporation, FICO. So certainly your listeners, as you implied, are familiar with FICO scores. So Fair Isaac provides that credit scoring for your credit card company, your bank, especially with mortgages. 20% of their revenues come from mortgages. So to the degree that the Federal Reserve, as they implement monetary policy, becoming more comfortable with our inflation path, likely that the Fed will lower rates, which should make mortgages more affordable or more interesting to consumers. And if that happens and mortgage volumes increase, that should help Fair Isaac, FICO.
Once again, your selections for this Stock Picker Monday, Booz Allen Hamilton Holding Corporation, BAH, and Fair Isaac Corporation, FICO, FICO. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Odyssey app.